This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Twisted Palace, Book 3 of The Royals, written by Aaron Watt, performed by Zachary Weber and Angela Gothels. Chapter 1. Reed. Where were you between 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. tonight? How long were you sleeping with your father's girlfriend? Why did you kill her, Reed? Did she make you mad? Threatened to out the affair to your dad? I've watched enough cop shows to know that you keep your mouth shut when you're in a police interrogation room. Either that or you just utter the four magic words, I want my lawyer. Which is exactly what I've been doing for the past hour. If I were a minor, these assholes wouldn't dream of questioning me without a parent or an attorney present. But I'm 18, so I guess they think I'm fair game. Or maybe that I'm stupid enough to answer their leading questions without my lawyer. Detectives Cousins and Schmidt don't seem to care about my last name. For some reason, I find that kind of refreshing. I've gotten a free pass my entire life because I'm a royal. If I get in trouble at school, Dad writes a check and my sins are forgotten. For as long as I can remember, girls have lined up to hop into bed with me so they can tell all their friends they bagged a royal. Not that I want girls lining up for me. There's only one girl I care about these days, Ella Harper. And it absolutely kills me that she had to watch me get dragged out of the house in handcuffs. Brooke Davidson is dead. I still can't wrap my head around it. My father's platinum blonde, gold-digging girlfriend was very much alive when I left the penthouse earlier. But I'm not telling these detectives that. I'm not an idiot. They'll twist everything I say. Frustrated with my silence, Cousin slams both his hands on the metal table between us. Answer me, you little shit! Under the table, my fists start to curl. I force my fingers to relax. This is the last place I should lose my temper. His partner, a quiet woman named Teresa Schmidt, shoots him a warning look. Reed, she says in a soft voice, we can't help you unless you cooperate, and we want to help you here. I arch a brow. Really? Good cop, bad cop? I guess they've watched the same TV shows that I have. Guys, I say carelessly, I'm starting to wonder if you have hearing issues or something. Smirking, I cross my arms over my chest. I've already asked for my lawyer, which means you're supposed to wait until he arrives to ask questions. We can ask you questions, Schmidt says, and you can answer them. There's no law against that. You can also volunteer information. For instance, we can move this process along if you explain things like why you have blood on your shirt. I resist the urge to clamp a hand against my side. I'll wait until Halston Greer gets here, but thanks for your input. Silence falls over the small room. Cousins is visibly grinding his molars. Schmidt just sighs. Then both detectives scrape back their chairs and leave the room without another word. Royal, 1. Police, 0. Except, even though they've clearly given up on me, they still take their sweet-ass time granting my request. For the next hour, I sit in the room, wondering how the hell my life got to this point. I'm not a saint, and I've never claimed to be one. I've gotten into my share of fights. I'm ruthless when I need to be. But I'm not this guy. The guy who gets dragged out of his own house in handcuffs. The guy who has to watch fear fill his girlfriend's eyes as he's hauled into the back of a police cruiser. By the time the door swings open again, claustrophobia has set in, spurring me to be ruder than I should. Took you long enough? I snap at my father's lawyer. The 50-something gray-haired man is dressed in a suit, despite the late hour. He gives me a rueful smile. Well, looks like somebody is in high spirits. Where's Dad? I demand, peering past Greer's shoulder. He's in the waiting room. He can't be in here. Why not? Greer shuts the door and walks over to the table. He sets his briefcase on it and unbuckles the gold snaps. Because there are no restrictions against parents testifying against their children. Testimonial privilege extends only to spouses. For the first time since I was arrested, I feel queasy. Testifying? This isn't going to court, is it? How far are these cops planning on taking this bullshit?
Reed, take a breath.
My stomach twists. Damn it. I hate that I revealed even a trace of helplessness in front of this man. I don't show weakness. Ever. The only person I've ever been able to lower my guard around is Ella. That girl has the power to smash through my barriers and actually see me. The real me, and not the cold, callous ass that the rest of the world sees. Greer pulls out a yellow legal pad and a gold fountain pen. He settles in the chair across from mine.
I'm going to make this go away, he promises. But first I need to know what we're dealing with here. From what I've managed to squeeze out of the officers in charge of the investigation, there's security footage of you entering the O'Halloran penthouse at 8:45 tonight. That same footage shows you leaving about 20 minutes later. My gaze darts around the room, searching for cameras or recording equipment. There's no mirror in here, so I don't think there's anyone watching us from some shadowy second room. Or at least I hope not. Everything we say in here is between us, Greer assures me when he notices my wary expression. They can't record us. Lawyer-client privileges and all that. I release a slow breath. Yeah, I was at the penthouse earlier, but I didn't fucking kill her. Greer nods. All right. He jots something down on his notepad. Let's go back even earlier. I want you to start from the beginning. Tell me about you and Brooke Davidson. No detail is too small. I need to know everything. I swallow a sigh. Awesome. This is going to be fun.
Chapter 2 Ella. The royal boys have rooms in the south wing, whereas their dad's suites are on the other side of the mansion, so I hook a right at the top of the stairs and hurry across the gleaming hardwood toward Easton's door. He doesn't answer at my soft knock. I swear that boy could sleep through a hurricane. I knock a bit louder. When I hear nothing, I push the door open to find Easton sprawled face down on the bed. I march over and shake his shoulder. He moans something. I shake him again, panic bubbling in my throat. How is he still sound asleep? How had he slept through all the commotion that just happened downstairs? Easton, I burst out. Wake up!
What is it? He grumbles, one eyelid slitting open. Shit, is it time to go to practice?
He rolls all the way over, pulling the blankets with him and revealing a lot more skin than I need to see. On the floor, I find a pair of discarded sweatpants and toss them on the bed. They land on his head. Get up, I beg.
Why?
Because the sky is falling. He blinks groggily.
Huh?
Shit's bad, I yell, then force myself to take a deep breath, trying to calm down. It doesn't work. Just meet me in Reed's room, okay? I snap. He must hear the uncontrollable anxiety in my voice, because he tumbles out of bed without delay. I see another flash of bare skin before I duck out the door. Rather than go to Reed's room, I sprint across the wide hallway toward my own bedroom. This house is ridiculously large, ridiculously beautiful, but everyone inside of it is so messed up, including me. I guess I really am a royal. But no, I'm really not. The man downstairs is a glaring reminder of that. Steve O'Halloran, my not-so-dead father. A wave of emotion sweeps over me, threatening to buckle my knees and send me into a bout of hysterics. I feel terrible about just leaving him down there. I didn't even introduce myself before spinning on my heel and running upstairs. Granted, Callum Royal did the same thing. He was so racked with concern for Reed that he simply blurted out, "I can't deal with this right now, Steve. Wait here for me." Despite my guilt, I push Steve into a tiny box in the back of my mind and slap a steel lid on top. I can't think about him right now. My focus needs to be on Reed. In my room, I waste no time sliding my backpack out from under my huge bed. I always keep it in a place where I can easily access it. I unzip the pack and sigh in relief when I see the leather wallet that holds the monthly cash payments I get from Callum. When I first moved here, Callum promised to pay me $10,000 a month, as long as I didn't try to run. As much as I hated the royal mansion at the beginning, it wasn't long before I grew to love it. These days, I can't imagine living anywhere else. I'd stay even if I didn't have the cash incentive. But because of my years of living without any cash, and my generally suspicious nature, I never told Callum to stop. Now I'm eternally grateful for that incentive. There's enough money in my bag to sustain me for months, probably longer.
I shoulder the backpack and then hurry toward Reed's door at the same time Easton emerges into the hall. His dark hair is sticking up in 100 different directions, but at least he's got pants on now.
What the fuck is going on?
He demands as he follows me into his older brother's bedroom. I throw open the doors of Reed's walk-in closet, my gaze frantically darting around the large space. I find what I'm looking for on a low shelf in the back.
Ella,
Easton prompts. I don't answer him. He frowns as he watches me drag a navy blue suitcase across the cream-colored carpet.
Ella, damn it, will you just talk to me?
The frown turns into wide-eyed gawking when I start throwing stuff into the suitcase. Some t-shirts, Reed's favorite green hoodie, jeans, a couple of wife beaters. What else would he need? Boxers, socks, a belt.
Why are you packing Reed's clothes?
Easton is practically shouting at me now, and his sharp tone snaps me out of my panic. The worn gray t-shirt in my hands falls to the carpet. My heartbeat accelerates as the gravity of the situation hits me again. Reed was arrested for killing Brooke, I blurt out. Your dad's at the police station with him. Easton's jaw drops.
What the hell?
He exclaims. And then, the cops came when we were at dinner? No, after we got back from D.C. Everyone minus Reed had gone to D.C. for dinner earlier. That's how the royals roll. They're so loaded that Callum has multiple private planes at his disposal. It probably helps that he owns a company that designs airplanes, but it's still ridiculously surreal. The fact that we took a plane from North Carolina to D.C. tonight to go for dinner is crazy rich. Reed stayed behind because his side hurt. He'd been stabbed at the docks the other night and claimed that his pain meds made him too woozy to go with us. But he hadn't been too woozy to go see Brooke. God, what had he done tonight? It happened about 10 minutes ago, I add weakly. Didn't you hear your dad screaming at the detective?
I didn't hear a goddamn thing.
Shame flickers in his blue eyes. I kind of pounded a Mickey of vodka when I was at Wade's tonight. Came home and crashed right afterward. I don't even have the energy to lecture him about his drinking. Easton's addiction issues are serious, but Reed's murder issues are a million times more urgent at the moment. I curl my fingers into a fist. If Reed were here right now, I'd punch him, both for lying to me and for getting hauled away by the police. Easton finally breaks the stunned silence.
Do you think he did it?
No. But as confident as I sound, inwardly I'm shaken up. When I got back from dinner, I saw that Reed's stitches were pulled and he had blood on his stomach. I keep those intimidating tidbits from Easton, though. I trust him, but he's hardly ever sober. I need to protect Reed first and foremost, and who knows what might come out of Easton's mouth when he's drunk or high. Swallowing hard, I refocus on that task, protecting Reed. I hurriedly toss a few more items of clothing into the suitcase and zip it up.
You haven't told me why you're packing,
Easton says in frustration. In case we need to run.
Us?
Me and Reed. I bolt to my feet and race over to Reed's dresser to raid his sock drawer. I want to be prepared just in case, okay? That's the one thing I excel at, being prepared to run. I don't know if it'll come down to that. Maybe Reed and Callum will stroll through the front doors and announce, "All fixed, charges were dropped." Maybe Reed will be denied bail or bond or whatever the hell it's called. And won't come home at all. But in the event that neither of those things happens, I want to be ready to skip town in a heartbeat. My backpack is always stocked with everything I need, but Reed's not a planner like I am. He's impulsive, doesn't always think before he acts. Before he kills? I shove the horrible thought aside. No, Reed couldn't have done what they're accusing him of.
What are you guys yelling about?
A sleepy voice comes from Reed's doorway. We can hear you all the way down the hall.
The 16-year-old royal twins step into the room. Each one is wearing a blanket around his waist. Does no one in this family believe in pajamas?
Read off, Brooke, Easton tells his brothers.
Easton, I say in outrage.
What? I'm not supposed to tell my brothers that our other brother just got arrested for murder?
Sawyer and Sebastian both hiss out a breath.
Are you serious? Sawyer demands.
The cops just took him away, I whisper.
Easton looks a bit queasy.
And I'm just saying, they wouldn't have done that if they didn't have some kind of evidence against him. Maybe it's about the...
He draws a circle in front of his stomach. The twins blink in bewilderment.
What? The baby? Seb asks. Why would Reed care about Brooke's demon spawn?
Crap. I forgot that the twins weren't in the loop. They know that Brooke was pregnant. We were all there for that horrible announcement. But they're in the dark about Brooke's other claim. Brooke was threatening to say that Reed was the father of the kid, I admit. Two sets of identical blue eyes widen.
He wasn't, I say firmly. He only slept with her a couple times, and that was more than 6 months ago. She wasn't that far along.
Whatever, Seb shrugs. So you're saying Reed knocked up Dad's child bride and then offed her because he doesn't want to have a little Reed running around?
It wasn't his, I yell.
Then it's really Dad's? Sawyer says slowly.
I hesitate. I don't think so.
Why not?
Because, the secrets in this house could fill half the ocean, but I'm done with holding any of them back. It hasn't done us any good.
He had a vasectomy.
Seb narrows his eyes.
Dad told you this?
I nod. He said he did it after you guys were born because... Your mom wanted more kids and couldn't have them because of some medical condition.
The twins look at each other again, communicating silently. Easton rubs his chin.
Mom always wanted a girl. She talked about it a lot, said a girl would have softened us up.
His lips twitch.
But I don't think girls make me soft in any way.
Frustration jams in my throat. Of course Easton's going somewhere sexual. He always does.
Sawyer smothers a laugh behind his hand, while Seb grins openly.
So, let's assume that Reed and Dad are both telling the truth. Who's the baby daddy, then?
Maybe there isn't one, Easton suggests.
There has to be, I say.
Both Reed and Callum never doubted Brooke's pregnancy claim, so it had to be true.
Not necessarily, Easton counters. She could have been lying. Maybe her plan was to fake a miscarriage after Dad married her. Sick, but possible.
Seb is nodding, clearly on board with this idea.
Why don't you think Reed killed her?
Easton asks me, his blue eyes flickering with curiosity.
Why do you believe he's capable of that?
I shoot back.
He shrugs and looks at the twins instead of me.
If she was threatening the family, maybe he is. Maybe they got into an argument and there was an accident. There's lots of explanations.
The sick feeling in my stomach threatens to erupt. The image Easton is casually painting is... possible. Reed's stitches were ripped out. He had blood on him. What if he...
No, I choke out. He didn't do it. And I don't want us to even talk about it anymore. He's innocent. End of story.
Then why are you getting ready to skip town?
Easton's quiet question hangs in the bedroom. I swallow a moan of agony and rub my eyes with both hands. He's right. A part of me has already decided that Reed could be guilty. Isn't that why I have his suitcase and my backpack all ready to go?
The silence drags on until it's finally broken by the unmistakable sound of footsteps somewhere below us. Since the royals don't have live-in staff, the boys instantly tense up at the signs of life downstairs.
Was that the front door? Seb asks. Are they back? Sawyer demands. I bite my lip. No, that wasn't the front door. That was... My throat closes up again. God, I forgot about Steve. How could I forget about him, damn it?
That's what? Easton pushes.
Steve, I confess. They all stare at me. Steve's downstairs. He showed up at the door just as Reed was taken away.
Steve, Easton echoes, slightly dazed. Uncle Steve?
Sebastian makes a croaky sound.
Dead, Uncle Steve?
I grit my teeth. He's not dead. He looks like Tom Hanks from Castaway, though, minus the volleyball.
Holy shit.
When Easton starts for the door, I grab his wrist and try to haul him back. I don't have the strength for that, but the contact gives him pause. He tilts his head to study me for a second.
You don't want me to go down there and talk to him? This is your dad, Ella.
My panic returns in full force. No, he's just a guy who knocked up my mom. I can't deal with him right now. I gulp again. I don't think he realizes I'm his daughter.
You didn't tell him? Sawyer exclaims.
I slowly shake my head. Can one of you go downstairs and, I don't know, take him to a guest room or something?
I'll do it, Seb instantly replies. I'm coming with you, his brother pipes up. I've got to see this.
As the twins race for the door, I quickly call out to them. Guys, don't say anything about me. Seriously, I'm not ready for that. Let's wait until Callum gets home. The twins exchange another one of those glances, where a whole conversation takes place in a second.
Sure,
says Seb, and then they're gone, galloping down the stairs to greet their not-dead uncle. Easton steps closer to me. His gaze lands on the suitcase near the closet, then locks onto my face. In a heartbeat, he grabs my hand and laces his fingers through mine.
You're not running, little sis.
You have to know it's a stupid idea. I stare at our entwined fingers. I'm a runner, East.
No, you're a fighter.
I can fight for other people, like my mom or Reed or you, but I'm not good with conflict at my door. I chew harder on my bottom lip. Why is Steve here? He's supposed to be dead. And how could they arrest Reed? My voice trembles wildly. What if he actually goes to jail for this?
He won't. His hand tightens on mine. Reed's going to be back, Ella. Dad will take care of everything.
What if he can't?
He will. But what if he can't?
Chapter 3. Ella. After a sleepless night, I find myself in the sitting room that overlooks the front courtyard. There's a plush bench tucked beneath the enormous expanse of windows that make up the front of the house. I throw myself onto the cushion, fixing my gaze on the circular driveway beyond the window pane. My phone is in my lap, but it hasn't made a peep all night or morning. Not a phone call, not a text, nothing. My imagination is running wild, conjuring up all kinds of scenarios. He's in a cell. He's in an interrogation room. His wrists and ankles are shackled. He's being beaten by a cop for not answering questions. Does he have to stay in jail until the trial? I don't know how this whole arrest charge trial thing works. What I do know is that the longer Reed and Callum are gone, the lower my spirits sink.
Good morning.
I nearly fall off the bench at the sound of the unfamiliar male voice. For a second, I think that someone broke into the house, or that maybe the detectives are back to do a search. But when I glance at the door, I find Steve O'Halloran standing there. The beard's shaved off, and he's dressed in a pair of slacks and a polo shirt, looking a lot less like a homeless person and a lot more like the students' fathers you see around Astor Park. The private school the Royals and I attend.
Ella, right?
There's a hesitant smile on his face.
I nod abruptly and place my phone face down as I turn back to the window. I don't know how to act around him. Last night, I hid in my bedroom while Easton and the twins took care of Steve. I don't know what story they told him about me, but it's obvious he has no recollection of me or the letter he received from my mom before he left on the hang gliding trip where he supposedly died. Easton stopped by before he went to bed and informed me that Steve was in the green guest room. I didn't even know there was a green guest room or where it was located. A crippling sense of anxiety makes me want to run and hide. I am hiding. But he found me anyway, and facing my father is more intimidating than beating back 100 mean girls at school. Well, Ella, I'm a tad confused. I startle at the nearness of his voice. Looking over my shoulder again, I find him standing only a couple feet away. I dig my heels into the cushion of the bench, forcing myself not to move. He's just a man, two legs, two arms, just a man who got a letter from a dying woman about a long-lost daughter, and instead of tracking that woman and that child down, he went on an adventure. That kind of man. Did you hear me? He sounds even more bewildered now, as if he can't figure out if I'm ignoring him or just hard of hearing. I cast a desperate glance toward the door. Where's Easton? And why isn't Reed home yet? What if he never comes home? I almost choke on the raw panic that burns my throat. I heard you. I finally mutter. Steve moves even closer. I can smell whatever soap or shampoo he used this morning. I'm not sure what I expected when I got out of that taxi last night, but his tone becomes wry. It sure as hell wasn't this. From what East told me, I gather Reed was arrested? My head jerks in another nod, and for some reason, it bugs me to hear him call Easton East. The nickname feels wrong, leaving the mouth of a stranger. He's not a stranger. He's known them since they were born. I gulp. Yeah, I guess he has. I guess if anyone is a stranger to the Royals, it's me, and not Steve O'Halloran. I think Callum once told me that Steve is the godfather to all the boys. But nobody has thought to explain to me who you are. I know I've been gone for a while, but the royal household has been a bachelor residence for years. A chill flies up my spine. No. God, no. I can't have this conversation right now. But Steve's light blue eyes are probing my face. He's waiting for an answer, and I know I have to give him something. I'm Callum's ward. Callum's ward, he echoes in disbelief. Yes. Who are your parents? Friends of Callum's? Do I know them? He wonders, half to himself. Panic jolts through me, but luckily, I don't have to answer, because I suddenly glimpse a black town car pulling into the driveway. They're back. I lunge off the bench and make it to the parlor in 2 seconds flat. A weary Callum and an equally tired Reed trudge inside, but both stop in their tracks when they spot me. Reed turns. His vivid blue eyes slowly find mine and lock on. My heart stutters, then careens into a gallop. Without a word, I launch myself at him. He catches me, one strong hand burying itself in my hair, and the other wrapping around my waist. I cling to him, mashing myself chest to chest, thigh to thigh, as if I can keep him safe with this simple embrace. "Are you okay?" I whisper against his left pec. "I'm fine." His voice is low, gruff. Tears sting my eyes. "I was scared." "I know." His breath wafts over my ear. "It's gonna be okay. I promise. Let's go upstairs and I'll explain everything." "No, you won't," Callum says tersely, overhearing Reed's promise. "No talking to anyone unless you want to make Ella a witness." A witness? Oh, God. The police are talking to witnesses, and Reed is trying to tell me everything is okay. Another set of footsteps echoes behind us. Reed releases me, and his eyes widen at the tall blonde man who enters the foyer.
"Uncle Steve?" he blurts out.
"Reed," Steve nods in greeting. Callum spins toward my father.
"Steve, Christ, I forgot you showed up. I was thinking I'd dreamt the damn thing."
His gaze swings between Steve and me.
"Did you two meet?"
I nod vigorously and try to convey with wide eyes that I don't want the whole daddy-daughter thing coming out. Callum's brow furrows, but his attention is dragged away when Steve says,
"We were just getting acquainted when you arrived, and no, you didn't dream it. I survived."
The two men eye each other for a moment. Then, they both step forward, meet halfway, and exchange a manly hug that includes several good-natured backslaps.
"Damn, it's good to be home," Steve tells his old friend.
"How are you even here?"
Callum shoots back, looking dismayed.
"Where the hell have you been the last 9 months?"
In a voice that's half angry, half awed, he adds,
"I spent $5 million on a search and rescue effort."
"It's a long story," Steve admits.
"Why don't we go sit down somewhere, and I'll fill you in?"
A pounding of feet on the stairs interrupts him. The three youngest royal brothers appear on the second floor landing, their blue-eyed gazes instantly homing in on Reed.
"Told you he'd be back," Easton crows as he takes the steps two at a time.
He has a serious case of bedhead, and he's wearing nothing but boxers, but that doesn't stop him from dragging Reed in for a quick hug.
"You okay, bro?"
"Fine," Reed grunts.
Sawyer and Sebastian round out the group, focusing on their father.
"What happened at the police station?"
Sawyer demands.
"What's going to happen now?"
Seb chimes in. Callum sighs.
"I got a friend out of bed, a judge I know, and he came down this morning to set bail for Reed. I need to deliver Reed's passport to the clerk of court tomorrow morning. In the meantime, we wait. You might have to stay here a while longer, Steve,"
he informs my father.
"Your place is currently being held as a crime scene."
"Why, did someone finally off my beloved wife?"
Steve asks in a dry voice. I jerk in surprise. Steve's wife, Dinah, is a terrible, venomous woman, but I can't believe he's joking about someone killing her. Callum can't believe it either, because he responds in a sharp voice.
"Hardly something to joke about, Steve. But no, it's Brooke who died, and Reed here is being falsely accused of having a hand in that death."
Reed's fingers tighten through mine.
"Brooke?"
Steve's eyebrows soar up to his hairline.
"How did that happen?"
"Head injury,"
Reed says coolly,
"and no, I didn't do it."
Callum glares at his son.
"What?"
Reed growls.
"Those are facts, and I'm not afraid of the facts. I went there last night after a phone call from Brooke. You were all gone, and I felt okay, so I went. We argued, I left. When I left, she was unhappy, but alive. That's the story."
"What about your stitches?" I want to scream. "What about the blood I saw on your waist when I came home from dinner?" The words stick in my throat, making me cough violently. Everyone stares at me for a moment, before Easton finally speaks.
"Okay, if that's the story, I'm on board."
Reed's expression darkens.
"It's not a story, it's the truth."
Easton nods.
"Like I said, totally on board, bro."
His gaze travels to the newcomer in our midst.
"I'd way rather hear Uncle Steve's story anyway. Coming back from the dead, that's badass."
"Yeah, he wouldn't tell us a thing last night,"
Sebastian grumbles, glancing at his dad.
"He wanted to wait for you."
Callum lets out another sigh.
"Why don't we go into the kitchen? I could use a cup of coffee. The coffee at the police station gave me heartburn."
We all follow the head of the royal household into the massive modern kitchen that I fell in love with the moment I moved in. As Callum walks over to the coffee maker, the rest of us gather at the table,
We all sit down as if this is just any other normal Sunday, not the Sunday after Reed was arrested for murder and a dead man walked out of the ocean to our front door. It's so surreal. I can't make sense of this, any of it. In the chair beside mine, Reed rests a hand on my thigh, although I'm not sure if it's to comfort me or himself. Or maybe he's comforting us both. After he's settled in his seat, Easton gets right down to business.
So, are you finally going to tell us why you aren't dead? He asks my father.
Steve smiles faintly.
I still can't tell if you're happy or sad about that fact.
Neither, I almost blurt out. I manage to tamp down the response at the last second, but it's the truth. Steve's reappearance is more confusing than anything, and maybe a bit terrifying.
Happy, the twins reply in unison. Ovs, Easton agrees. How are you alive?
Reed this time. His voice is sharp, and his hand moves soothingly over my thigh, as if he knows how on edge I am. Steve leans back in his chair.
I don't know what Dinah's told you, if anything, about our little trip. You were hang gliding and both harnesses failed, Callum says, as he joins us at the table.
He sets a cup of coffee in front of Steve, then sits down and sips his own cup.
Dinah was able to deploy her emergency chute. You dropped into the ocean. I spent 4 weeks searching for your body.
A crooked grin pops up on Steve's face.
And only 5 million, you said? Did you cheap out on me, old man?
Callum doesn't find this amusing. His expression grows as stony as the face of a cliff.
Why didn't you come straight home after you'd been rescued? It's been 9 months, for Pete's sake.
Steve runs a shaky hand over his jaw.
Because I didn't get rescued until a few days ago.
What?
Callum looks startled. So where the hell were you for all those months? I don't know if it was the illness or malnourishment, but I can't remember everything. I washed up on shore, on Tavi, a tiny island about 200 miles east of Tonga. I was severely dehydrated and in and out of consciousness for weeks. The natives took care of me, and I would have returned earlier, except the only way off the island was via a fishing boat that comes around twice a year to trade with the islanders.
Your dad is talking, my brain tells me. I search his face for traces of myself and find nothing except our shared eye color. Other than that, I have my mother's features, her body type, her hair. I'm the younger, blue-eyed version of Maggie Harper, but she must have made no impression on Steve, because he shows no signs of recognition.
Apparently, the islanders harvest a particular seagull egg that is sold as a delicacy in Asia. The fishing boat took me to Tonga, where I then begged my way back to Sydney.
He takes a sip of his coffee before making the understatement of the century.
It's a miracle I'm alive.
When did you get to Sydney?
Sebastian asks. My dad purses his lips in thought.
I don't remember. I want to say 3 days ago.
Callum balks.
And you didn't think to call and tell us you were alive?
I had some matters to take care of, Steve says tightly. I knew that if I called, you'd be on the first plane out, and I didn't want to be distracted from my search for answers.
Answers? Reed echoes, his tone sharper than before.
I went to find the guide who led the hang gliding expedition and tracked down my things.
I'd left behind my passport, a wallet, clothes.
Did you find the guide?
Easton's caught up in the story, too. We all are.
No.
The tour guide had been missing for months. Once I hit that dead end, I went to the American Embassy and they shipped me home. I came directly here from the airport.
It's a good thing you didn't go home, Callum says grimly. Or you might have been arrested too.
Where's my wife? Steve asks, sounding wary. Dinah and Brooke are attached at the hip.
Dinah's still in Paris.
What were they doing there?
She and Brooke were shopping.
Callum pauses.
For the wedding.
Steve snorts.
What schmuck got suckered in for that?
This one.
Callum points to himself.
You're kidding.
She was pregnant. I thought it was mine.
But you had the vest.
Steve cuts himself off and quickly looks around the table to see if anyone had caught his slip.
The vasectomy?
Easton finishes. Callum's eyes cut to me before shifting back to his son.
You know about that?
I told them. I jut my chin. There are too many stupid secrets in this house.
I agree,
Steve declares. He turns to pin those familiar blue eyes on me.
Callum, he says, without taking his gaze off mine.
Now that I've answered all your questions, perhaps you can respond to one of mine. Who is this delightful young woman?
Reed's hand tightens over my thigh. The knot in my stomach feels like a block of cement now, but at some point, the truth had to come out. Might as well be now.
Don't you recognize me?
I ask, smiling weakly.
I'm your daughter.
Chapter 4. Ella.
I don't think Steve O'Halloran is a man who's caught off guard too often. Pure shock stiffens his body and floods his expression.
My.
He trails off, turning to Callum for assistance, support.
I'm not sure.
But for a man who so casually asked if someone had offed his wife, he doesn't seem equipped to handle the less dramatic revelation that he's sitting at the same table as his kid.
Daughter.
Callum finishes gently. Steve blinks in rapid succession.
Do you remember the letter you received before you and Dinah left for your trip?
Callum asks. Steve slowly shakes his head.
A letter? From whom? From Ella's mother.
Maggie,
I say, my voice hoarse. Thinking about my mom always makes my heart ache.
You met her 18 years ago, when you were on shore leave. You two,
hooked up, knocked boots, did the horizontal mamba,
Easton supplies.
Ella's mother got pregnant.
Callum takes over, before his son says the million inappropriate things we all see dangling at the end of his tongue.
She tried to track you down during the pregnancy, but was unsuccessful.
When she was diagnosed with cancer, she sent a letter to your old base, hoping they'd find a way to get it to you, and they did. You received the letter 9 months ago, right before you left.
Steve is blinking again. After a few seconds, his eyes focus, and he stares intently at me.
Curious.
Pleased.
I squirm in my chair, which causes Reed to stroke my leg in reassurance. He knows I don't like to be the center of attention, and right now, everyone in the room is looking at me.
You're Maggie's daughter,
Steve says, his tone a mixture of wonder and interest.
She passed away.
I nod, because the lump in my throat is too big to speak around.
You're my daughter.
The words come out slowly, as if he's testing their flavor.
Yep,
I manage to get out.
Wow.
Well, okay.
He rakes a hand through his long hair. A wry smile touches his lips.
I guess we have a lot to talk about, huh?
A spark of panic ignites my belly. I'm not ready for this. I don't know what to say to this man, or how to behave around him. The royals might have known Steve for years, but he's a stranger to me.
I guess so, I mumble, staring down at my hands.
Steve glances at his old friend.
I assume you'll let me stay here until the police release my penthouse.
Of course,
My anxiety intensifies. Can't he check into a hotel or something? Yes, the royal mansion is huge, but the thought of living in the same house as my presumed dead father makes me nervous. But why? Why aren't I throwing my arms around this man and thanking God he's alive? Why aren't I ecstatic at the idea of getting to know him? Because he's a stranger. That's the only answer that makes sense right now. I don't know Steve O'Halloran, and I'm not good at letting new people in. I spent my entire childhood moving from one place to another, trying not to get close to anyone, because I knew that Mom would just pack us up again, and then I'd have to say goodbye. When I came to Bayview, I didn't plan on forming any real bonds. Somehow, I wound up with a best friend, a boyfriend, surrogate brothers whom I adore, and a man, Callum, who, as screwed up as he is, has become a father figure to me. I don't know where Steve fits in, and I'm not ready to figure it out yet. That will give Ella and me time to get to know each other, on her own turf, Steve is saying, and I realize he's smiling at me. I muster up a smile in return. Cool beans.
Cool beans?
Reed pinches my thigh teasingly, and I turn to see him fighting a laugh. Yeah, maybe Steve isn't the only one who's in shock right now. Luckily, the discussion soon turns toward Atlantic Aviation, Callum and Steve's business. I notice that Steve doesn't seem interested in the minute details, just a project that the two refer to in vague terms. Callum once said they do a lot of work for the government. Eventually, the two men excuse themselves and duck into Callum's study to go over the company's last quarterly report. Alone with the boys, I search their faces for signs that they're as freaked out by all this as I am. This is weird, right? I blurt out when nobody says anything. I mean, he just came back from the dead. Easton shrugs.
Told you Uncle Steve was a baller.
Sawyer snickers. I shoot a worried look at Reed. Am I going to have to move in with him and Dinah? That sobers up the kitchen.
No way,
Reed says immediately. Low and firm.
My dad is your guardian.
But Steve is my father. If he wants me to live with him, then I'd have to go.
No way. Not happening, Easton agrees.
Even the twins are nodding emphatically. Warmth unfurls in my chest. Sometimes I still can't believe that we all hated each other when I first got here. Reed was determined to destroy me. His brothers alternately taunted or ignored me. I fantasized about running away on a daily basis. And now, I can't imagine not having the royals in my life. Another wave of anxiety churns in my stomach as I remember where Reed spent the night. There's a very real chance he won't be in my life anymore, not if the police really believe he killed Brooke. Let's go upstairs, I say in a shaky voice. I want you to tell me everything that happened at the station. Reed nods and gets up without a word. When Easton rises too, Reed holds up a hand.
I'll fill you in later. Let me talk to Ella first.
Easton probably sees the panic etched into my face, because for the first time ever, he actually does what he's told. I lace my fingers through Reed's as we climb the back staircase to the second floor. Once we're alone in my room, he wastes no time locking the door and yanking me into his arms. His mouth lands on mine before I can blink. The kiss is hot, desperate, and all tongue. I thought I was too exhausted to feel anything other than, well, exhaustion, but my entire body tightens and aches as Reed's scaled lips tease me to the edge of oblivion. I groan in protest when he breaks away, which makes him chuckle.
I thought we were going to talk,
he reminds me.
You're the one who kissed me, I grumble.
How am I supposed to concentrate on talking when your tongue is in my mouth? He pulls me onto the bed, A second later, we're curled up on our sides, facing each other, our legs twined together.
"Were you scared?" I whisper.
His gorgeous face softens.
"Not really."
"You were arrested for murder," I say in anguish. "I would be scared."
"I didn't kill anyone, Ella."
He reaches out and strokes my cheek with his fingertips.
"I swear to you, Brooke was alive when I left the penthouse."
"I believe you."
"And I do.
Reed isn't a killer. He's got flaws, lots of flaws, but he could never, ever take someone's life."
"Why didn't you tell me that you went over there?"
I ask in a hurt voice.
"What did Brooke say to you?
And the blood on your side?"
"I pulled my stitches. I wasn't lying about that. Must have happened on the drive home because I wasn't bleeding when I was over there. And I didn't tell you because I was high on pain meds when you got back, and then we started fooling around." He sighs. "I got distracted. And honestly, the whole thing didn't even seem important. I was going to say something in the morning."
There's nothing but sincerity on his face, in his voice. I lean into his palm, which is still cupped over my cheek.
"Did she want money from you?"
"Yup,"
he says flatly.
"She was freaking that Dad scheduled a paternity test. She wanted to make a deal. If I signed over my trust fund to her, she'd take the cash and split. We'd never have to see her again."
"And you said no?"
"Hell yeah, I said no. I wasn't gonna pay that woman a dime. The DNA test would have shown that her baby wasn't mine or Dad's. I figured we just had to wait it out for a few more days."
His blue eyes darken.
"I didn't think she'd fucking get herself killed."
"Do you think it was an accident?" I'm grasping at straws, but I honestly don't understand how any of this happened. "Brooke was awful. But none of us wanted her dead. Gone, maybe, but not dead. Or at least I didn't."
"I have no clue," Reed answers. "I wouldn't be surprised if Brooke had enemies we didn't know about. She could have pissed off someone bad enough that they decided to bash her head in."
I wince.
"Sorry,"
he murmurs hastily. I sit up and rub my tired eyes. "What evidence do the cops have?"
"Video footage of me entering and leaving the building," he admits. "And something else, too."
"What?"
"I don't know. They're not telling us yet. Dad's lawyer says that's normal. They're still trying to build their case against me."
I feel sick again. "They don't have a case. They can't." My lungs seize up, making it hard to breathe. "You can't go to jail, Reed."
"I won't."
"You don't know that." I jump off the bed. "Let's just go. Right now. You and me. I already packed your bag."
Reed bolts up in shock. "Ella."
"I mean it," I interrupt. "I've got my fake ID and $10,000 in cash. You've got a fake ID too, right?"
"Ella."
"We could create a new life somewhere," I say desperately. "I'll get a job waitressing. You can work construction."
"And then what?"
His voice is gentle, and so is his touch as he gets up and tugs me toward him.
"Live in hiding for the rest of our lives? Look over our shoulders all the time, worrying that the cops will find us and haul me away?"
I bite my lip, hard.
"I'm a royal, baby. I don't run. I fight."
Steel hardens his eyes.
"I didn't kill anyone, and I'm not going to prison for something I didn't do. I promise you."
Why does everyone always feel the need to make promises? Don't they know that promises always get broken? Reed squeezes my shoulder.
"These trumped-up charges will go away. Dad's lawyers aren't going to let..."
A high-pitched shriek cuts him off. We both spin toward the door, but the scream didn't come from the second floor. It came from downstairs. Reed and I fly out of my room, reaching the second floor landing at the same time as Easton.
"What the hell was that?"
Easton demands. That was Dinah O'Halloran, I realize, when I peer over the balcony railing. Steve's wife is standing in the middle of the parlor below us, her face whiter than a sheet, one hand raised in the air as she gapes at her not-dead husband.
"What's going on here?" she's shouting in horror. "How are you here?"
My father's mild voice wafts up the stairs. "Hello to you too, Dinah. It's wonderful to see you."
You're,
she's stuttering.
"You're dead. You died."
"Sorry to disappoint, but no, I'm very much alive." Footsteps echo, and then Callum appears beside Steve.
"Dinah," he says tightly, "I was going to call you."
"Then why didn't you?"
she roars, teetering on her 5-inch heels.
"You didn't think to pick up the phone sooner to let me know that my husband is alive?"
As much as I dislike Dinah, I kind of feel bad for her. She's so obviously stunned and confused by this, and I don't blame her. She just walked in and saw a ghost.
"What are you doing here?"
Steve asks his wife, and something about his blasé tone rubs me the wrong way. "I get that Dinah is a bitch, but can't he at least hug her or something? She's his wife."
"I came to see Callum."
Dinah won't stop blinking, as if she can't figure out if Steve is actually there or if she's hallucinating.
"The police. They left a message on my phone. They said my penthouse..."
She hastily corrects herself.
"Our penthouse. They said it's a crime scene."
I wish I could see Steve's expression, but his back is to the stairs. I only have Dinah's expressions to gauge his, and it's clear that whatever she's seeing on his face is making her extremely uneasy.
"They told me Brooke is dead."
"That seems to be the case," Callum confirms.
"How?" Dinah wails, her voice shaking wildly. "What happened to her?"
"We don't know yet."
"Bullshit. The detective said that they detained a suspect for questioning."
Reed and I slowly edge away from the railing, but it's too late. Dinah has spotted us. Sharp green eyes laser into us, and she releases a cry of outrage.
"It's him, isn't it? Reed did this to her."
Callum steps forward, entering my line of sight. His shoulders are like two granite slabs, rigid and unyielding.
"Reed had nothing to do with it."
"She was having his baby. He had everything to do with it."
I flinch.
"Come on," Reed mutters, reaching for my hand. "We don't need to listen to this."
"But we do. That's all we're going to be listening to once the news of Brooke's death gets out. Soon everyone is going to know about Reed and Brooke's affair. Everyone's going to know that she was pregnant, that he went over to the penthouse that night, that he was interrogated and charged with her murder. Once the story breaks, the vultures are going to circle. The pitchforks will come out, and Dinah O'Halloran will be leading the charge. I suck air into my lungs, hoping to calm myself, but it doesn't work. My hands are shaking, my heart is beating too fast, each thump-thump vibrating with fear that I feel straight to my bones.
"I can't lose you," I whisper.
"You won't."
He pulls me away from the landing and draws me into his arms. Easton disappears into his room as I press my face tight against Reed's muscled chest.
"Everything will be okay,"
he says gruffly, his fingers sliding through my hair. I feel his heartbeat against my chest, and it's steadier than mine, strong and even. He's not afraid. And if Reed, the guy who was just arrested, isn't afraid, then I need to take his lead. I need to borrow his strength and conviction, and allow myself to believe that maybe, for the first time in my screwed-up life, everything will be okay.
Chapter 5, Reed. "Think word's already spread, bro," Easton mutters under his breath. I shove my shit into my locker before surveying the room. Usually chatter and jokes are tossed around the locker room during our early morning practice, but everyone is quiet today. A number of eyes slide away, not willing to meet mine. My gaze ends on Wade, who winks and gives me the thumbs up. I'm not sure what that means, but I appreciate the support.
I returned the gesture with a brief nod. Beside him, our left tackle, Liam Hunter, stares at me. I give him